You want me to start? Do the roll call?
That would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Lisa Gillis?
Here.
Eric Simon?
Here.
Beth Chang?
Here.
Carrie McLean?
Yeah, Carrie emailed me. She will not be joining.
Okay.
She is a personal student, which must take priority.
Susan Charette?
Here.
Shannon Roberts?
Here.
Lauren Behan?
Here.
Ellie Raitt?
Here.
Charlotte Meyer?
Here.
Luke Gilfillan?
Here.
Charles Roger?
Here.
All right. That's all I have here. We can go to the, there isn't any public comment. We can go to the adoption of the meeting minutes. They were in your packet.
John, I have one point. It's kind of minor, but where it says the paragraph that begins with my name, the second paragraph, it says there will be a leaders forum coming up that will present a climate action plan. So what happened was there was a guest speaker that presented the climate action plan for Ann Arbor. So if you could just get that in there somehow.
That they, okay.
So the Ann Arbor climate action plan was.
Presented. Oh, and Ann Arbor climate. Okay.
It was a specific climate action plan.
Oh, okay. Okay, I can see.
But sort of as a sample or something to strive for, I guess.
Okay. Okay, if there aren't any other issues, can we go ahead and adopt those minutes?
I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes.
Second.
Okay, all in favor can say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. We'll just go on to commissioner reports now.
Okay, does anybody want to start?
This is Lauren, I can start. I don't really have very much to report, but I'm looking forward to kicking it into high gear this year. I do wanna mention that Catherine Rader is on the phone too. She joined our Zoom meeting and she is interested in volunteering with the commission. So I just want everyone to know who Catherine is.
Hi, Catherine. Nice to meet you, or e-meet you, or Zoom-meet you.
Well.
Are you, Catherine, are you Patrick's sister?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I can go next. I also don't. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
I was going to say, Catherine, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I just graduated from McGill University in Montreal. In geography and environment. So I figured since I'm home for a few months until a more permanent job situation comes into view that I would help out where I can. So cool. This looks like a great opportunity.
Wonderful.
Great.
Hello. Well, thank you very much for, you know, offering to help us out. We look forward to having you involved. And just, I guess I can lay out that, you know, again, one of the things that we're working on is having resident volunteers. So basically, I think, Catherine, you're going to be aligned with Lauren, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And hopefully, again, you can hear my my Zoom. I am doing this from a phone connection while we work through internet problems that I'm having.
You're on your dial-up modem?
I am. Well, thank you, Lauren. looking forward to, you know, to kind of, you know, to get in, it's really hard to get back into the swing of things, God knows, with the year that we had last year, with the holidays, with the news from last week. So I thank you all for being here, and we'll do the best that we can.
I guess I'll go next. Before I forget, I don't have anything to report, no meetings or anything like that, but I do have a question that I want to remember to ask. Is right before this meeting, Andy Basney, who used to be one of our commissioners, emailed me and said that he heard from a resident who had really enjoyed the tree trails and the tree map, and had a question that maybe, John, you can answer. Wanted to know if there's a way to use the tree map to search for a particular type of tree, and if not, is there a person within the village that he could talk to about his questions about the village trees? Would that be you or somebody on your staff?
Yeah, it would be me. The tree map that's public facing, mm-hmm. I don't think that one has the ability to do that type of a deep dive of a search, but our internal database can pull that up. So if they have a question about a specific tree, they can email myself.
If you don't mind, I'll just sort of forward the email and copy you and introduce you to each other.
Yeah, and then we can find it wherever that tree is in the village. Sure, you can do that.
Thanks. But yes, I've mentally, Shannon, been starting to think about the greenhouse gas inventory, and I think that's kind of top of my mind, is how to take that and make it accessible and interesting to people, you know, especially now that we will, you know, hopefully feel like our efforts are taking place within a larger context that's supportive of it. So I think it'll be a challenging but interesting project.
I think so, for sure.
Totally agree.
Hey, Shannon, do you want to go next?
Sorry. Patrick, one second. Sorry for the background noise. I have no updates as far as meetings, but I definitely want to talk about maybe hoping kind of everyone had a chance to look at maybe the greenhouse gas inventory that I shared the last time. And we certainly could talk about now or set up some additional follow-ups to talk about what's the next steps. I know, Lisa, we talked a little bit, but then what strategically, it'd be good to start thinking about what strategically, how we use this this year. Then what strategically we want to do this year with it, as well as I think I talked a little bit with Susan, and she could share a little bit further about what Plant Green is up to related to climate action, and that this greenhouse gas inventory puts right into that. I'm really sorry.
That's okay.
She livens up our meeting.
I know.
They always talk at the worst times. It's just like as soon as I start talking, they know. So anyways, talk strategically about this year, and then I'd like to talk strategically. Susan, maybe you could share when you have a chance about
before,
what you...
Before I do that, Shannon, is your inventory posted somewhere? Is that, or maybe Beth could answer that if... Like, I saw it going by in the meeting, but is it somewhere that we could look at it, or no?
Isn't it in our Google Drive?
I sent it out and I can resend it again and then we can post it wherever. And there's kind of two documents. There's the Word document that I shared, which is kind of the summary of what maybe we could post on a web page. But then I have a big working document with kind of the procedures written in it and things like that. Okay.
Yeah, because that would be good if we could just go on and access and look at it. So I could go next because that's a little bit of an introduction. So I am the River Forest Sustainability Commission's member of the core team of Planet Green. And I just wanted, because we have a lot of new members, I just wanted to explain a little bit what Planet Green is, because I know when I joined this, I heard a lot of things flying by and I didn't really know what they were. So Planet Green is, it's part of Seven Generations Ahead in Oak Park. It's funded by Oak Park Community Foundation's Community Works, I believe. And it was a 10-year sustainability plan that was formulated in 2010 and ran through 2020. So now that we are officially in 2021, we have gone through that plan. So at our last meeting, there were discussions on where to go from here. And that is still being discussed, but what they're focusing on is energy, basically, because that's energy and emissions, because that's where the work needs to be done. And also on how we can take the work that we've done and maybe spread out to some of the surrounding communities who have not made, you know, the same amount of progress on this. So that's where, and so every meeting it comes up, the Maywood Covenant. So again, I don't know if everybody is aware of that, but the village signed a covenant with Maywood to strengthen the relationship and share resources. And I understand a commission is being formed. And I guess maybe this one's for you, Lisa. I'm hoping that somebody on that commission will be representing sustainability and speaking to sustainability, so that that would be a portion of this agreement. But,
Well, there's not necessarily a commission for, at least as far as I know, and John, you might know better, there's not a commission specifically for the Maywood Covenant. There's a commission that's being put together for diversity and inclusion. Okay. That potentially, you know, kind of some of the actions might kind of be brought to life through the Maywood Covenant. But right now, I think we're trying, I guess I can learn more.
Oops, there goes Lisa. Okay. So basically what I just wanted to share is that, you know, every week Gary Coonan looks at me and says, like, so, you know, have you made any progress on that? And I say not that I know of. And then he kind of stares at me for a full minute, which I guess is supposed to indicate that we should be making some. So I'm just passing that along. Anyway, but
I looked it up, but at the end of the day, this is the challenge we're going to have, is that, you know, our committee supports River Forest. And while I would welcome supporting Maywood as well, I just, like, I don't know what that means. And I'm not sure we have the manpower to do that. So let me find out more information about the Maywood Covenant and kind of what are expectations from a village perspective and how that might then
I just want to clarify, Lisa, that that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if there is this diversity committee, given that there has been, you know, it would just be nice if sustainability could be part of it. And maybe it'll be decided that it's not, but just wanted to pass that along. But there goes. She gone? Oh, she's back. Okay. And then I also wanted to talk about the, so that was the last meeting, but then the December forum, as I was saying to John, was a very very detailed and nice presentation from Ann Arbor that has a very well articulated climate action plan. And I was kind of bouncing ideas off of different people about this. And it seemed to me that not everybody knows what a climate action plan is. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. Let me find my notes here. So a climate action. What?
That's on the agenda for later.
Okay.
Because that is an item that we'll cover later.
Okay.
So why don't we get all the commission report and then we can get into it.
So the commission report was just that we heard this very detailed plan. It's out there, and I could make that available to anybody if they'd like to see it.
I'm happy to go next, Lisa. I'll just jump in here.
Thank you.
So just real quickly, I mean, it's been what, you know, we skipped a month. So in December, just two things of interest that I was involved in is there was a follow-up. I spoke to this commission, it could have been the last time we met, about Electrify America, their cycle 3 investment, which is I believe a lot of that is the funding that's coming from the VW settlement. I had a follow-up meeting on that with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus Energy Subcommittee. That was on December 9th, so it was right after our last meeting, I believe. And that's how, like, the $500 million of the round 3, cycle 3, they call it, is going to be spent. But just to remind everybody, is on two things. It's on providing zero emission vehicle infrastructure that is convenient and accessible. And secondly, educating Americans about how zero emission mobility can meet their transportation needs now, as well as in the future. So it's still kind of early stages on some of this, but you know, the reason we're interested in this is on, you know, some of the needs we might have for electrification within River Forest really could be funded by a lot of the grants that are coming out of this. We have already registered our interest in this. So we're in the queue right now. It's a little bit of a shoot first, ask questions later. So I need to kind of circle back with John and with Lisa and kind of determine, you know, we've batted around ideas as a commission on, you know, where we might want charging infrastructure and things like that. I think we probably need to kind of bake that a little bit so that when this stuff does come around, we can articulate what it is we want and how much it's gonna cost and things like that. That was up against the Planet Green Leadership Forum, by the way, that meeting. So I don't know if anybody attended that. Susan, were you at that? Okay, good. Because I felt bad, this was the first year I wasn't able to go to that, but I figured you would probably be there. So. And then, you know, the only other meeting of interest was on December 15th, which was also Metropolitan Mayor Caucus Environment Committee, which was the Community Solar Clearinghouse Program for residents. So I'm gonna send out some more information on this because this is very interesting. It's yet another channel that residents in this case can use to acquire renewable energy for their homes. So this one's specific to residents. It's called the CS2 program, Community Solar Clearinghouse. And essentially, this is the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus putting together a consolidated residential program to be able to acquire locally produced renewable energy for their homes. So this is kind of like a you know, non-private version of like all those people that are knocking on doors trying to sell people solar credits. This is, you know, this is a version that's like nonprofit led and is a really good solution and very economical for residents to offset part or all of their energy consumption with renewables that are mostly coming from solar farms in Illinois, actually, in this case, right? So these are the developers that are building huge, you know, 150 megawatt solar farms downstate, and they're selling, you know, those credits to nonprofit organizations, in this case, to, you know, to try to sell within their communities. So, you know, a lot more on that coming. That's really heating up. This is all a result of the Future Energy Jobs Act, FEJA, it coming to fruition. Like it took several years for those projects to actually get funded and built. And so now you have all these developers around the Midwest who have a lot of energy to sell. And most of it's gonna be commercial through sales teams that are gonna be super annoying. And some of it's going to flow through, you know, like kind of government programs to just provide people with numerous options. That's all I have.
Eric, is that a community solar project?
That is a community solar project, Susan, which I think is more attractive for us as something to kind of, you know, push within our community.
And is it up and running? Like, can people subscribe right now?
Not yet. It'll be up and running actually early next month, but I haven't seen an update in a little bit, I think because of the holiday. So I'm sure in this month's meeting with the energy subcommittee, we'll get a full update on that.
Thank you, Eric. Well, forgive me for my ignorance in this, but a question that might come up is, you know, how is this different, or does it play nice with the MC squared effort that that just was recently implemented?
It's actually a really good question, because like the challenge that we're running into is there are so many, we went from no options for renewables to so many options for renewables that it's really hard to disseminate this for our residents. We updated the website recently in December, I think it was, John, was probably the last update we did to try to kind of explain all these options to people. The fact is, Lauren, is that all these things are absolutely colliding together to create like too many options for people. And so I think our role and my role in particular is really to try to make sense of this for the River Forest residents so they know what's what. And it's not easy. Like I trip over myself constantly and I'm looking at this stuff every day. So, you know, the thing we're doing with, you know, within River Forest can actually complement this in some ways, but in a lot of ways it does kind of compete as like another option for people to be green. So we have work to do.
Can I add one thing to that, Eric? So what we have right now is called community aggregation. And that, so that's sort of analogous to when you take a flight, an air flight somewhere, and you buy an offset carbon emission to make it a carbon neutral activity. Whereas community solar, you're actually buying a piece of a project. So you look at like your electricity intake over the last year, and you say, this is how much I want to buy. And that determines the share. So it's linked to a particular project, as Eric was explaining. So I would say it's a little greener. I don't know if Eric would agree, but you know, community aggregation is a great entryway, and it was something that we could do right away, but it's a little, you know, like just, you know, sort of throwing money at something and saying, okay, we're going to keep consuming this and somebody somewhere will have some solar. But to me, this is the next step and a little bit greener and a much better option for somebody who either doesn't have the capital to, you know, doesn't have the initial outlay to put it on their own home, or maybe they don't think they're going to be in their home long enough that they would recap it. Like, you know, they only think they're going to be in their home for 5 years. So you just be in this program. There's usually not a long-term contract. So there's no upfront costs, and it's just a more cost-effective and community way to be involved in solar. So.
I totally agree. Susan just described it beautifully. It's definitely, this is more grassroots. So instead of buying theoretical renewable energy credits that could be produced in Canada, well, actually they have to be produced in the United States, but can be produced anywhere. It'll never reach your grid at all. This is kind of it's not a direct way to do it, but it's a more direct way to do it. So that's well said. Thanks, Susan. I want to catch one other thing.
I was just going to say, how does that align with people that are putting solar on their homes? So
you almost have like the three tiers, right? The most direct way you can be sustainable is by producing your own energy. Right, so putting solar on your home is like choice one. And then like Susan said, like you don't have the capital to put solar on your home. Maybe you're in a historic home. Maybe your roof is 100 years old, or you have lots of shading. Whatever reason you can't do solar, then kind of like the second tier would be a community solar project. And if for some reason, if that's not economical enough, or if it's oversubscribed and you can't get in, then this third tier is more of the renewable energy credits, which is out in the mass market and has been for years.
But an individual can't go after renewable energy credits, right? That's only...
You can. So, you know, you could Google this and, you know, there's 500 companies who will gladly, especially, you know, in Illinois, which is deregulated, they'll sell you... It's what Susan described with the airplane. It's like... you can buy offset credits for whatever energy you're using at your home in order to be a little bit greener. Hey, last thing related to this, and then I'll shut up, is that if you run into community members that are asking questions about this stuff, please by all means answer the questions yourself if you feel comfortable, but you can also pass them on. Like Lisa passed on a resident last month who had a really kind of interesting solar on her roof situation that we, you know, that we obviously we don't take a stand from a commercial standpoint, but we are able to at least provide context and allow people to understand what's been proposed to them, because it is very confusing. So if your neighbors or friends are asking questions, part of our role is to try to help them sort that out. So please take advantage of that.
Thank you. And I think Gail was most helpful, like, most excited to have that, like, somebody tell her she was making a good decision. Because there are a plethora of companies out there you can rent, you can buy, even in the residential world, and let alone then you have community solar and then you have renewable energy credits. So I'm gonna, has everybody else gone amongst the commissioners? Okay, I'm gonna talk about three things. One, in terms of connections, I basically just, actually talked to Julie Moeller today. Roy Strom has been purchased by Lakeshore Recycling. What that means for the village, I don't think we know yet. I would expect that we're gonna work to kind of ensure the same level of service that we've always gotten. But George is going to work in the new organization. But that basically hit me today, and I guess that was effective on January 4th. I've been attending the Village of River Forest trustee meetings, and there's been a lot of back and forth with the bike plan, just given the cost of implementation and some of the things that are going on related to COVID, but it is still moving forward. It is well-funded. Eric, John, the team that work at Village Hall have really done a great job of ensuring that we have the funding available to do a lot of the things that we want to do. So they're moving forward with striping. And I don't know, John, if you could speak to any of the other, like when that will be done.
And right, what right.
Besides striping.
Yeah, so that was just approved at the board meeting last night. That was all of the village controlled streets, not the IDOT streets. And so the striping will be done, and there will be signage to go along with that to guide people per the bike plan. And the striping involves mostly a lot of Sharrow lanes with the little bike symbol on it. And so that'll be done before April 30th. So as soon as the weather breaks in the spring, they'll get all that in so we can get it done this fiscal year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And one of the reasons I think they wanted to do it, A, is it was approved from, conceptually last year. There are certainly economies of scale with doing as much of it or all at the same time. And then there is, with COVID, a lot more people biking. And we just want to make sure that they can do it safely in the village. Last but not least, John, I sent this to you. Illinois Composts, like, they sent their annual membership dues through. I think this is the first time that actually they billed the village directly. I think before that, one of the many things that Julie did, perhaps without us knowing, is paying for certain things. And so she paid for that in the past, I believe, anyway. So I don't know if you saw it. We should just talk about kind of.
So Lisa, to hold this position, does that mean you're paying for it now?
I'm hoping not to.
Lisa, can you explain a little bit what it is? Illinois Compost.
It's basically it's part of, actually the bill came from seven generations ahead. So it is yet another group that I guess they support. And it's the Illinois Food Composting Coalition. Which is a group that basically, I can send you the information, but it's a group that basically advocates for composting it, like in the state of Illinois.
And that's right. I saw that came in. Did you say that was like an annual?
It's an annual membership. I mean, there's bronze. Yeah, there's bronze, silver, and gold. Right now we have silver. I think we could potentially, if we want to be, and we should be very fiscally responsible, we could probably go down to bronze. So, you know, and I can certainly, you know, send everybody some more information regarding it, but it's one of the many organizations in the state that, you know, kind of are advocating for, you know, all the different aspects of sustainability from, you know, recycling to reusing to reducing. And this one is specifically focused on composting, which then actually leads to the fact that, there is a meeting in March, on March 1st, that we've been asked to present in. And Lauren, between you and I, we're going to do it. It's just a short presentation on what we're doing with regard to composting, you know, in the as part of the River Forest Sustainability Commission. We can speak to our, you know, the on-site composting program that we're doing. We can, you know, talk about pumpkin smash. We can talk about the tree composting, the, you know, the holiday Christmas, you know, holiday wreaths, trees, and garland recycling that is done, the leaf recycling. So I think there is a lot that we are doing, you know, and we are doing more than most municipalities in the state. I'll try to send it out ahead of time to get everybody's feedback once, you know, Lauren and I kind of pull it together, but it's a great way for us to kind of showcase what we do. And then next Tuesday, the 19th, is the Mayor's Caucus Community Roundtable Conversation, where basically, you know, anybody can, you know, like all communities are invited to kind of give it a brief overview of what they do. It's from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. I can send out the invite for anybody that wants to join. I'm gonna be there and try to do a quick overview of kind of, you know, what we've been doing, kind of tapping into the, if you recall, we had written a document to, that helped us get an award from the Metropolitan Reclamation District. So I'll basically turn that into a presentation and we'll, you know, quickly go through that. It's like a 5-minute, you know, here's who we are. This is kind of our key accomplishments for the year.
It was called what again, Lisa?
The Mayor's Caucus Community Roundtable Conversation.
Okay.
And I can send both of these links out to everybody.
Lisa, did we lose you?
Okay, and then last but not least, and Eric, you had brought this up, so I did talk to Kathy Tenure. We have a number of people that are, I'm here, can you hear me, lose me?
No, should be on.
Are you there?
Yeah, we hear you. Hello? Now.
We can hear you now.
Okay, I don't know what happened. I do have Rick, my audiovisual guy, next door to me, trying to help me work, so here he is.
Does Rick know he's going to probably have to take the trash down to the curb as soon as our contract's
done? Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
All right, so can you hear me, guys?
You're going to go off just for a
moment. Yes.
Don't do that until after talking. Okay, basically, the River Forest Sustainability Commission, Tenure, it's me. Okay, the people that are officially done at the end of April, me, Eric, Lauren, and Susan Charette. Because some of us, including me, Susan, and Lauren, have filled positions for other people that are technically up at the end of the month. So this is how it works. Basically, technically, we're in our term till the end of April. And basically, after the election on April 6th, the new board will reconvene, and they'll go through all the commissions and who's doing what. The expectation is we all roll over. If someone doesn't want to roll over, they should let me know. So I can let Kathy know. And basically they'll try to kind of cover the reappointment of all commissioners across sustainability, across the traffic committee, across the economic development committee, et cetera, in the May meeting. And if something comes up and they can't, they'll do it in the next meeting. But again, the expectation is we'd all just continue in our role unless somebody, you know, wants to opt out for whatever reason. And look, life gets in the way. So if anybody, you know, amongst the folks I just mentioned, you know, wants to opt out, just let me know. And then that kind of leads to me and the fact that some of you might have heard that I'm running for trustee So my position could be open. If I don't win, I'd love to just continue in this role, but if I do win, then someone would have to backfill me as the chair. So if anybody's interested in being chair, they should let me know that as well, so we can start planning for the future.
I vote for Shannon's kids.
Well, the commission is going to become the best feeder pipeline to the board.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, it sure will. And I've been listening to the, and actually this is good for anybody that is chair, is to listen in on the village board meetings, because it does kind of give you a good handle on kind of what the key issues are that the community is facing. You know, some of the, you know, kind of what goes back and forth and how things get done. So it actually has been very eye-opening. I wish actually as when I became chair, I started listening to some, back in April, because I think it would have made it just would have been an interesting thing to know. It helped me put it that way. So that's all my prepared remarks. Any questions?
I had a question about the what used to be Royster on the Lakeshore Recycling. When is it, are we still discussing opt-in versus opt-out, and is there like a timeline for that?
We're not talking about that. That's tied into the contract with Royster. Part of me wishes we had actually potentially pushed for for negotiating it ahead of time. It's up for renewal, and we'll have to kind of see if anything changes in terms of our services with the new provider. And John, I don't know if you can speak to that or if you know anything, because again, this is relatively new news.
It's very
out in the press. I thought I would share it.
Right, it's very new news, and I called after I had heard about it. I called George Strom, and he said everything at this time would remain exactly the same. The current contract ends next year, May 1st of 2022.
Yeah, 2022.
Right. So nothing will change right now. And he reassured me that, you know, they have a fleet that's completely set up to handle River Forest in the way that it's been serviced for many years. So, they plan on doing everything the same, but would have a good relationship with us. He said he's the area vice president still. But that's really all I know at this point. You know?
Yeah. And right now, Susan, to answer your question, we have not really made any progress with regard to the opt-in or opt-out with regard to composting, just because of other priorities. Okay. All right, so I'm assuming you guys can still hear me. Our next agenda item is, I guess, I'm just going to start. It's River Forest Resident Communications and Outreach. Right now, it would be awesome if everybody can go into the website and review the copy for your programs. And if you need to make any changes, please work with Jonathan Pape and Sarah Pfeiffer to get those changes made. It's very easy to do. I mean, Eric updated the solar pages in December. And we just need to make sure that everything kind of is up to date and reflects what we currently, what the programs currently are.
Where would we find contact information for those people you mentioned?
I can send you the contact information. Actually, John, can you put it in the meeting minutes? It would be, again, John Pape and Sarah Pfeiffer.
Yes. Yeah, it's jpape at vrf.us and sphyfer at vrf.us. That's their email.
What's the at what?
At vrf.us, like VRF. Village of River Forest.
US.
Dot US, like United States.
And the second thing is, I've been, you know, we have a editorial calendar, and I'll put it up in a minute, or actually it's on the Google Drive. It would be great. I mean, thus far, I think I've been really working to try to ensure that every month, and I think this is something that we've been working on, and we've been doing pretty consistently since June, May or June, is making sure that we do have at least two items, which is our max, in the River Forest monthly email from Kathy Aducey. We also have the opportunity to use Facebook and Instagram for outbound communications. So for example, in January, we had a, we actually got three posts. We actually put something in to let people know that the trees, all the holiday greenery was compostable, because there was a lot of talk on Facebook regarding making sure that we were green with regard to getting rid of trees. And quite frankly, River Forest is green, because if you put it out on the curb, Roy Strom takes them and composts them. So that was important information we wanted to give out. We also basically talked about eWorks, which is an electronics recycling option that Cook County uses. And eWorks actually is a not-for-profit that basically employs people with disabilities, and basically uses any fees charged for recycling of TVs, which is the only charge there is, you know, to support that business. And with the holidays and people getting electronics, we wanted to let people know that that, you know, if you had an old gadget, there's a really good way to get rid of it through that program. And last but not least, we wanted to do a New Year's resolution regarding single-use plastics. Charlotte, we're still going to get that working at a greater level. And so we did send out that Facebook post. And our posts, when we do send them out, do get a lot of, you know, kind of sharing and commentary. So it's all very good. What would be good if is if you would go into Google, and I can send out the it's basically on Google Drive, and we did kind of map out on a month by month basis what we'd cover in each of those areas. And if you have an error, if you have a if you could look at it, and if there is a month where your program is being featured, it would be really pretty awesome if you could create some copy and try to do it ahead of time, so that we have all that editorial kind of sitting out there and waiting. I'm going to share my screen so you can kind of see what I'm like, what I'm hoping I can share my screen. No, I can't, because I don't want to lose you. But basically, I'll send out the link, and it would be awesome if you guys could go in and check and start writing copy to inform our citizens of, you know, kind of a lot of the different programs. Let me see if I can pull it up. Can I pull it up? I'm gonna try to pull it up. Hold on, because I. Actually, I'm not going to, because then I'll lose all you. So I will send it out as a link so you can go in and see for yourself. It'll be self-evident what represents your program. So for example, Carrie McLean's not on the phone, but in March, we tried last year to do a healthy lawn, healthy family program at the River Forest Library. We can certainly do that this year, like via Zoom, because all our programming is via Zoom. So we'd want to feature that in the email newsletter, as well as have a Facebook post and Instagram post to kind of highlight that this program is taking place. Does that make sense? Are you guys up for it? Okay. Let me, I'm trying to find my. Next on the agenda is, and I'm just trying to cover everything that's mine, so that we, Susan, then I'm gonna give you back the floor regarding climate action change. We had been talking about doing a presentation to the River Forest Board of Trustees in February. I am recommending we do that in March. Why? And it's because our fiscal year for the village is May 1st through April 30th. And the last we presented to the board was in August. And if we do March, that gives us 6 months between presentations. And it will allow us to then kind of update them on our successes, what we're gonna do in the future for fiscal year 21. And then Shannon, talk about our annual, like the metrics and kind of where we're tracking on that front versus the past year. And then at that point, we can put forth budget. I will kind of craft that document and share it with everybody the way I do now, you know, via BCC, so you all can provide your feedback directly to me so that we are in compliance with the Open Meetings Act. Next month, February, we can review that presentation so that we're set to present in March. Does that make sense? Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you. And I'd also for that start thinking about for each of your individual programs, what you would like to accomplish between, again, May 1st and April 30th of fiscal year 20. So for the fiscal year 22 program, you know, just start thinking about how we're gonna evolve our programs and what our goals would be on an individual program by program basis. And last but not least, I'm assuming you guys have heard about this, is that at the November 30th meeting of the Village of River Forest Board of Trustees, many residents came forward talking about noise related to gas-powered leaf blowers. A secondary concern was the environment. The Board of Trustees sent that to the River Forest Sustainability Commission for our perspective. I have written a document that provides that perspective, and I will be sending it out after this meeting. I wanted to quickly kind of walk you through it. And then Shannon, there is some information I need from you. And this is a draft. So if you will humor me, I will just quickly go through it so you know kind of what the thinking is after having conversations with many people. This is, as you might imagine, a multi-dimensional subject that of which the environment is only one issue. But I'm gonna share and we'll go from there. Can you guys see my screen? It's a Word document dated January 8th, 2020.
I can.
Okay, yep. So basically it just really opens with the fact that I'm kind of just drafting it for everybody's input because it needs to be our document. But basically the background is, again, we were asked to look at this on the 30th of November. Basically, if you look at the resident complaints, and they are in the appendix, they're principally about noise and environmental concerns were kind of raised to really just add additional rationale. So the document that kind of I pulled together focuses on the impact of gas powered blowers on the environment. Current regulation of gas powered leaf blowers and similar gas powered tools like lawnmowers, snow blowers, anything that's a two-stroke or four-stroke engine. And yes, I cannot believe I'm actually using the term with confidence, two or four-stroke engine. Secondly, would be what are other municipalities doing across the United States? Again, there's other considerations, those considerations being noise, of which I will say that for the team that we're not necessarily noise experts. There's also economic impact to consider. And then lastly, we put forth a perspective and recommended action. In terms of summarizing impact on the environment, there's overwhelming evidence that states that it is bad for the environment. The biggest quote was the Sierra Club. There was some research done in 2011 by Edmonds that basically says a commercial grade leaf blower emits more pollutants than a 62 pound 2011 Ford F-150 SVT Raptor. So basically, if you could drive that pickup truck 3,900 miles, the amount of hydrocarbons emitted would be the same as a two-stroke leaf blower being used for half an hour.
So we should buy F-150s for all the landscapers.
Yes. So basically that is, you know, again, I think that's like, there's reams and reams of data that says the same thing. It's really bad for you. The current regulation is the village allows use of leaf blowers and similar gas-powered tools during daylight hours every day. And the village code is 672. It reads as follows: any outdoor work completed by a resident involving the construction or repair of any building or structure or any mechanized landscaping, such as lawn mowing, is allowed from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and between 8 and 5 on Saturday and 9 and 5 on Sunday. So pretty much you could do it all day, every day. And the reason why complaints are up, not only in River Forest, but across the nation, including Larchmont, New York, and other Chevy Chase, Maryland, is because people are home due to COVID. So you're on your, you know, you're doing your Zoom call like we are tonight, and the windows are open and you hear the leaf blowers. You got to go around, shut your windows so you can hear, you know, kind of work. What are other municipalities doing? As of May of 2018, there are 134 cities, towns, and counties across 15 states in the US which have banned or restricted leaf blowers in some way, shape, or form, including six in the state of Illinois, all on the North Shore. This is not an easy thing to do. It really is not. The municipalities kind of restrict gas blowers in a number of ways. A complete ban, there are very few complete bans, with most of them like in Aspen, Colorado. Like there's three complete bans across the US right now. There's seasonal gas blower bans, meaning that you're only allowed to use gas blowers during like fall cleanup and spring cleanup. If you think about that's when, you know, the landscapers are really blowing when they're trying to get rid of leaves that have fallen for the trees and or clean up leaves that that might have been in beds, you know, left over from the fall. There's also noise restrictions that really are tied to the type of blower that are used. And then there's day and time restrictions. I guess this is a typo. I can get rid of this. Oh, separately, then there's a complete ban of gas and electric blowers. So usually if we look at all the municipalities, banning gas is separate from banning electric or battery. And obviously the electric or battery is more of a noise. If you're banning electric and battery, it's more of a noise issue versus a environmental issue. All the communities in Illinois restrict use through a combination of a seasonal gas blower ban in combination with a day and time of day restriction. And there was something on the books for the state of Illinois about banning leaf blowers completely by 2022. It was put on the floor by the Senate, the state Senate, by Laura Fine in February 2020, but the bill died. Again, because it's easier said than done. Other things we need to consider, and this is where, it's a no-brainer if you just think about it from an environmental perspective, but there is never an issue that is one-sided. Again, we talked about the fact that these are predominantly noise complaints. Secondly, banning gas blowers will inevitably have an impact on the landscaping businesses, many of which are owned by River Forest residents or those in their surrounding area trying to make a living. It will also have an economic impact on our taxing bodies. The Village of River Forest Public Works uses gas-powered blowers. The River Forest Park District uses gas blowers. Our residents use gas blowers if they're not using a landscaper. And then local businesses often hire landscapers to do work. So there's a negative impact on landscaping business because it'll just cost more for the equipment. Not only do you have to buy a new gas blower, an electric gas blower, electric blower, you'd have to buy batteries for that blower. The good news is Chevy Chase, Maryland has done an amazing assessment of all this, and we can really use a lot of their data, but net, a small landscaper, it would cost them $5,000 of unexpected capital expenditure. For a large landscaper, could be medium size, it could be up to $20,000. for a large one, more than that. So it's not insignificant, particularly in these days of COVID when a lot of people, you know, are downsizing and or, you know, kind of having a tough time with employment, et cetera. We'd have the same sort of costs on the on our taxing bodies, whether it be the public, whether it be the Village of River Forest or the Park District. And last but not least, if there are, we would fully expect, again, just hypothesis, that if the landscapers are have to spend more for their equipment, they would pass those costs on to the residents. You might have some landscapers that just don't come to River Forest anymore. So we would have potentially less choice and higher cost. There might also be tax implications if we have higher costs for the village. So these are all things to consider. When it gets into economics, I do think that we need to have kind of other people weigh in there. I think when it comes to noise, we have to have other people weigh in. So our perspective is, at least the proposed perspective that I put on the table, is that it's clear that restricting gas blowers in some way, shape, or form would make sense. Shannon, you'll see a paragraph in yellow. That paragraph, basically, it would be great to kind of get to some sort of CO2 emission equivalent. I think we have all the data. We know the number of residents. If we make an assumption with regard to how many of them are using gas leaf blowers, either themselves or through a landscape or third party, we can estimate CO2 emissions. And if we cut those emissions, because we know kind of it from a car perspective, we should be able to kind of take that into account with regard to our ongoing metrics. And of course, the numbers that I'm putting on the table in yellow don't take into account anything happening by the village or the park district. It also doesn't take into account any businesses like McDonald's, for example, on Harlem, hires a landscaper to do kind of leaf blowing and things with them. So basically what I'm recommending is that we convene, and now I say we, the Village of River Forest, convene a task force similar to the one created by the Village of Chevy Chase, Maryland, to study the impact of gas-powered leaf blowers. And they look at this from an environmental impact, which I think we provided a lot of the data already, from a noise perspective and then also from an economic impact perspective. There is a recommendation and a pretty robust plan that was done by the Village of Chevy Chase. So it's something that we can certainly steal from. I'm all about not recreating the wheel. And I think that task force needs to include a pretty diverse a participant population, including residents who use landscaping services, residents that don't use landscaping services. If we can get an owner of a landscaping business, that would be great to get that perspective. And then others are a TBD. And then I did put forth what I thought they should consider, which would be immediately restrictions similar to what is in the northern suburbs of Chicago, which are a combination of day and time restrictions. And by the way, Wilmette caught the one loophole and they fixed it, because you had some landscapers that were using electric leaf blowers plugged into a gas-powered generator. So we need to kind of close that loophole, which we've done. And we should probably be considered a complete ban of gas blowers sometime in the future. But again, it would be up to the task force. In parallel, though, I think the Sustainability Commission has to continue to advocate for less leaf removal. We did actually, coming out of some early conversations, we pulled together a couple quick Facebook and Instagram and email posts related to Leave the Leaves initiative. That really speaks to the fact that by leaving leaves in beds, it does encourage, it's a place where all kinds of critters live and it's better for the environment. I think we should continue to do that. And we can certainly start sharing and educating the negative consequences of gas-powered leaf blowers. So perhaps residents would voluntarily give up their gas blowers And then ultimately they might then encourage their landscapers to do the same. So again, that's my quick summary, just so that you kind of have an overview. I will send it out so you can all look at it, and I welcome all feedback. The goal would be to try to get it back to, or put it forth to the village, probably in March, so that they can convene a task force. It wouldn't be in time for the April kind of spring cleanup, but it certainly is something that could be done in time for the fall cleanup.
This is probably the nicest document ever produced by this commission, Lisa.
I was going to say, it's amazing.
It's really, really good. So, you know, just to provide some more context to everybody, a little bit of this is repetitive, is, you know, we try not to take strong positions on things that are not, like our role is really to provide information so that the decision makers can make sound decisions. So, you know, if you're thinking like this should have some kind of strong recommendation, like it's by design that it doesn't, it has recommendations, but, you know, we gotta be careful with our optics, as well as kind of what our role is with here. And when and this is in my opinion at this point, optics is, you know, we can't be seen as like we don't want to lose credibility, because we're seen as, you know, being extreme one way or the other. So by providing really, really sound information like Lisa has done, this allows, since we can't make decisions, this allows the people who do make the decisions to have all the information they need from our perspective, from the perspective of a sustainability standpoint. So I feel like we have to walk that line a lot. This does a pretty good job in doing that.
I have a question for John.
Yeah.
After seeing that, would you feel compelled to say when Public Works purchases new equipment, they will seek out a more environmental, or do you feel like you need more information?
Yeah, I feel like I need more information at this time. I mean, practically speaking, what we do on the west side of Thatcher is we need something powerful to blow the leaves back into the forest preserve, you know, to be honest with you. And we need to do it in a quick amount of time. And the park district probably uses leaf blowers more than we do. And they do it all over the parks, all over the village. So yeah, I would just want to find something that would work. But I think where this came from was noise driven, right? And so it was driven by noise, but then sent to the Sustainability Commission, and the Sustainability Commission is going to look at it from, obviously, the environment side of things. So, and that's fine. So with Public Works, we use them. Usually they're not right up against people's homes. Park District, yeah, those are kind of by homes. So I think the complaints are coming from landscapers right by people's homes. But at any rate, yeah, I just would need to know if there's anything we can use as an alternative that would make sense.
So this is one of those classic environmental conundrums where there's not actually a good alternative solution. Like, I mean, it's just simple, like, right, math on how many watts electric can produce versus a gasoline engine. It's just, I mean, the reason nobody uses electric is because they suck. You know, so like, you know, that's always part of the problem with this. The other thing, Lisa, is I do feel a little bit used, right? Like this is like, hey, let's go to the Sustainability Commission and see if they can come up with some excuses to drive our, you know, completely separate agenda that has nothing to do with sustainability. But so be it. We're here to pay.
Yeah. I actually did everything in my power to say that I didn't think they should come to the Sustainability Commission because I do think it's a noise issue. But again, I think that this will begin the dialogue. And again, a task force to look at this, you know, looking at it from, again, an economic perspective, looking at it from a noise perspective. I think that we have provided the information and we can certainly do more if necessary from an environmental perspective. is that dialogue needs to take place, you know, before a decision can be made. Now, to add on to, I think, John, what you were talking about in terms of, you know, is this something that would, you know, would get the village to switch over? I mean, I think part of it is economic on their end too, in terms of it will cost more money to use electric. Not only the machine itself actually is cheaper, but the batteries that you'd have to purchase in order to do the same amount of work, you know, without having to recharge is not insignificant. And that's what's driving up the cost. Now, one thing to note is that, again, this is another thing for the task force, is battery power is getting better and better. You know, and I think it is something that that is being looked at. And, you know, as soon as as it gets feasible to deliver the same power for the same time, gas versus electric, it would be an easy answer. Now, COVID and people working from home is accelerating some of these bans, but they are extended bans, meaning that the bans will not take place until 2 years from now, to give landscapers, for example, time to prepare for increased cost. A lot of also the obsolescence of the equipment. You're going to have to buy new equipment in the future. What does that look like? You know, the next time you buy, you know, make sure it's electric. It is something that kind of is increasing. But interestingly enough, again, it is still only in 15 states across the U.S. New York, Illinois, California, Florida, Texas, Colorado. And all that information is in the document. So in the interest of time, because I want to give time for Susan, I will send it out. And if you could potentially look at it and get me your feedback by, you know, is mid-February now?
Sure.
Okay.
Quicker deadline so we don't lose track.
Yeah.
Do you want to say February 1st?
Yeah.
It's like 2 weeks. Lauren's right. I actually wasn't going to write that down because it was so far out, but now I will.
Okay. Thank you. I just was trying to be cognizant that everybody's trying to do a lot of things these days, but I would love to get this out of the way. And every person I show it to has, you know, kind of more thoughts and ideas, and it is imperfect. I think, Eric, you said it right. There's no good answer. Again, if you look at it environmentally, it's a no-brainer, but that's not the only thing to think about. And again, that's not our charge. Put forth the environmental information into the board so that they can then consider it with everything else they're going to have together.
Well, you've put together an amazing amount of information in such a thoughtful way. And I just want to briefly mention a couple of questions related more to the environmental part. First is just a really stupid question, but at the beginning where you talk about the amount of pollutants, and I think you used the term hydrocarbons, is that, and then later we're trying to link it to like reduction of carbon emissions. Is there an equivalence there? Is that, I guess it's a really stupid question, but is hydrocarbons, is that the CO2 emissions that we're talking about wanting to reduce?
Equivalent, Beth, is 1.73 parts per million. I made that up. I'm kidding.
But I mean, is a hydrocarbon a type of harmful CO2 that is the type that we're tracking and working to mitigate?
That's a good question. Because you're speaking specifically with regard to some of the statistics from the Washington
Post. Like the little paragraph that you had at the beginning about it is a, you know, puts out more pollutants, and there's a bunch of different things. So just wanting that linkage to be clear, if in fact that is a linkage, since the conclusion at the end is, if we, you know, assume a certain amount of usage of gas powered blowers and we take them out of service, then we would be reducing CO2 emissions by a certain amount. So this is a question that we can resolve outside of this.
I was assuming that
they were. I think the pollutants is more around gasoline brings other pollutants, like pollutants that like CO2 is CO2. So there is, you do produce a certain amount of CO2, but you're going to, gasoline has a certain other level of pollutants in it as well. You're going to make, you know, there's sulfurs. It's very low, very, very low, but there's other like smaller pollutants that come with, like air pollutants that would come with it.
Right. And that's fine. That could be one of the things, you know, I feel like every time one of these questions come up, it is a great opportunity for education, right? So there may be pollutants that are unrelated to the goal of reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. That doesn't mean that they're not worth considering, but I just wanted to be clear where, what the basis is for saying that we would be reducing CO2 emissions. So that's a question. And then the other is the Leave the Leaves initiative that you mentioned at the end. I don't know, it would, I actually didn't know about that. And it's something that's been entering my own consciousness over the past few years, where I think a lot of people, you know, compulsively want to use blowers because they want to get every single leaf out of, like, say, their landscaping, and it's hard to do it with a rake, and, you know, and you compulsively try to make it all come off your lawn. And, you know, recently I've said, even in my own family, it's like, well, we can get most of it off, but really we don't have to keep going back trying to get every single leaf, because it's fine. I guess the issue has always just been, if you leave your lawn completely covered, you know, heavily covered in it, then it'll kill your lawn. But there's nothing wrong with, you know, some being left behind, or certainly if you have it in your landscaping or your garden area. So I don't know if this document is necessarily the right place for it, but it's something that might be an education thing in the spring that's not necessarily directly connected to this decision about what to do about blowers. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what that initiative is.
I mean, again, the leave. Yeah, no, it's something that basically was literally this past year. It was a Facebook post and an email thing.
Okay.
And it is part of a larger initiative, because coming out of conversations with Eric Palm and everybody, given some of the initial noise things, the thought was to start educating residents, and it was a major, okay. And by the way, yes, you have to take your leaves off of your lawn unless you mulch them, because you'll kill your lawn. But you can certainly keep leaves in your flower beds, and by keeping them in the beds, you provide habitat for critters in the winter. You also basically ensure the that all of the eggs that were laid in those leaves can actually birth critters. So if you do leave your leaves, you'll have more fireflies and things like that. So Beth, I agree with you. That's something that would be an education thing that that will be, again, we are being asked to kind of take on in a big way, well beyond the initial posts that were done in the fall. That, by the way, that post was picked up by the Oak Park Garden Club. We're very excited to hear that the Village of River Forest was advocating leaving the leaves. So, but that is actually a, the Leave the Leaves hashtag is one that is just is used for that purpose. So certainly something from an educational perspective that if anybody wants to raise their hand to take on, that would be awesome.
I think the other piece of education is just publishing that that statistic that you had about comparing to the truck, because people who are going to great expense to purchase Priuses and such and then are using a gas blower, they're kind of offsetting any gains by, you know, emitting all this gas. So short of telling people what to do, we can at least inform them that this is, this is what we're doing, and then the task force can get up to regulations, but at the very least we can forward the information that we learned in the course of looking into it.
Exactly. Agreed wholeheartedly. Okay, so stay tuned, more to come. And by the way, you know, it was something that we kind of had to take on without question, because I know in the past there were some other topics that we did pass on because it didn't fit within our strategic kind of framework. This one, I, you know, we believe you know, did. And we can thank, our trustees for sending it our way. All right, last but not least, and we might go a little bit over tonight. So our 90 minute, Eric, I'm gonna fail you now, I'm sorry. But hopefully—
We started late too.
Okay.
So maybe this could be more of an introduction, because this is a very big topic. So maybe it's good to just introduce it and then we can kind of mull over it and speak at greater length at the next meeting. But, you know, as I said in the commission report at the beginning, that, you know, all the conversation at Planet Green, and I guess I didn't mention that Oak Park is in the process of developing a climate action plan as well. And, you know, I did speak to Shannon about this, who knows far more than I do. So really what I would do is more like introduce it, and then maybe Shannon can say something about it. But I think one reason that we might, let me first define what a climate action plan is. So it's a detailed and strategic framework for measuring, which Shannon and Beth have already made a lot of progress on, planning and reducing greenhouse gas emissions and related climatic impacts. And then, you know, there are much more detailed ones that incorporate climate risks, which are looking at the things that are changing, like, you know, the number of times that Des Plaines River is flooding, or, you know, the change in the number of days where the temperature is above 90 and things like that, and making a plan of how you're going to deal with this instead of just reacting after the fact. And I think if we as a village can be more forward-looking, we can be much more cost-effective and do a better job. So that's one motivation for doing that. But I think another motivation for getting out in front of this, instead of, you know, saying, well, you know, let's just wait till Oak Park, you know, Oak Park has more resources, let's just wait till they figure something out and then we'll, you know, we'll grab on their coattails, is that it's possible that there will be a lot of grant money available, especially with the change in the leadership in our country. And I think that people who have well-articulated climate action plans will be in a much better position to take advantage of this. You know, just as Eric was describing with the VW money, that if we have this all worked out and something comes along, then it's just a matter of taking your climate action plan, you know, adapting to the specifics of a grant and putting it out there, instead of saying like, okay, what would we do? We have already thought it out. And then the last thing I would say, just by way as an introduction, is that the village has committed to net neutrality in three different agreements. One is Planet Green, another one I think is the Mayor's Caucus, and there's a third one. And it's a bit disingenuous if we sign these plans and then we don't have a plan in place that says this is how we're going to get there. So we have to have our initial metrics, but then we also need metrics in terms of, well, if we run our programs out the 30 years until our commitments are in 2050, will we hit our target? And if we won't, then, you know, then what was the point of signing that target if we're not enacting the plan? So it's a lot to take on, and it's not something that would be completed quickly, but it's just more of an orientation of this is something that we should be doing. And I don't know, do you have anything to add, Shannon? Because I know you were going to look into it a little bit.
Yeah, no, thanks, Susan. I think you described it really well of what it is. And it's really just kind of taking, we kind of did step one, I think, over the last year and a half, which is let me start over. So there's kind of two things your climate plan achieves, which is first and foremost, we have a greenhouse gas baseline in this village that we just measured. So we know where all of our greenhouse gases are coming from. And, you know, as Susan just described, the goal is to be net zero of our impacts of what the village is producing from greenhouse gases on the environment. So that is one, of the objectives of climate action planning, is first and foremost, as you know, what is your impact? What are your greenhouse gases you're putting off? And how are you going to achieve that net neutrality or move towards reducing your impact? The other thing that climate action plans do that Susan also mentioned was the idea that I think we all know that, you know, climate change is coming. There's a couple different scenarios that scientists have predicted. We could be in a 1.5 degree Celsius scenario, for example, or a much more extreme scenario. So what they recommend you do as part of your climate action plan is say, in a 1.5 degree scenario, what is that impact going to be on your local environment, that you, your physical environment that we live in? So as Susan mentioned, we might need to plan for rising rivers and more flooding and, you know, I'm making these up because I don't know them for this area, but I'm sure there's some studies out there that we can leverage from some of the local, you know, governmental organizations that know what, in the different scenario, they call it scenario analysis, what are our physical risks? And then, so there's physical risks to the area that we live in, and then there's also called what are, they call transition risks. So it's the idea that our energy infrastructure is also changing as a result of climate change. You know, we are all going to be moving towards more electric vehicles, for example. So also as part of climate change, we need to plan for those transition risks as well. So what this climate action does is it kind of summarizes all of these things that are related to climate that are coming as a result of climate, and just helps you set goals and targets, both in how you're minimizing your GHGs, also how you're potentially, you know, changing some of your, those physical and transition risks I described. So for example, how are we going to plan for the changes and, you know, energy mix and things like that. And then you set goals and targets and continually update to just be able to adapt to the all the changes that are coming with climate change in the upcoming years.
And one thing that the representative from Ann Arbor who made the presentation to Planet Green pointed out, and I think this is really important, is that she kept describing this as a living document. And I think one thing that makes people reluctant to take on something like this is it just feels like there are so many unknowns and you're feeling like you're getting something down and, you know, how could you ever get it right? But if you think of it as this is a plan at a point in time, and as new information comes in, you're adapting it and you're trying to get more, you know, more of the different actors in the village on board. You know, we have two universities, which I imagine are the two biggest employers in the village. And there's no way we could ever hit these climate agreements if we did not, you know, if we don't increase our communication with, Dominican does have a well-articulated plan, but we're just not communicating much about what that is, and maybe incorporating their metrics into, you know, the things that we have done. So as I said, I just meant this as sort of an introduction and for something that we would think about. And I'm happy to send out, I sent to Lisa the actual plan from Ann Arbor, which is very overwhelming. There's a PowerPoint presentation from Planet Green, which gives a good overview. So I'd like to send that out to everybody. And then if you want what's there to be, you know, sort of threshed out, you can go to Ann Arbor's. It's called A20 and look at the actual plan. But, you know, they've been working on this for years and years. And if you look at the steps, you know, they have sort of strategies and then they have steps and they connect the steps back to the strategies. And, you know, several of them we have done or are doing. So I think that that's encouraging to look at that. You know, one of the first step is community aggregation, you know, check. And community solar is a little bit further down. And then, you know, other things like, you know, looking into bulk buying. So, you know, like when Lisa met with the businesses to discuss plastic, some of them said, you know, this is not cost effective for us to purchase, but maybe if we had more of a purchasing cooperative, then it they would be able to purchase it, you know. So you know, just looking at how can we as a village come together and make this more cost effective and more likely to happen.
Can I just throw some things? Thanks, Susan, thanks for that, and Shannon. So we actually went through a couple all-day workshops a couple years ago to come up with a climate action plan. It was I'll have to go look back on all the documents, because maybe there was a good, basically, like, it was an all-day thing in Oak Park. It was done by the Rocky Mountain Institute, and it was grant money that I think came from the Community Foundation. And then there was a whole follow-up full day thing, and it was really to build a framework so that then communities can start to build their plan. We did a ton of work, and And it, the reason it kind of, and I'm not saying this is like what the future looks like for us, but you know, they didn't do a great job because we were basically left with so much work to do that there was no possible way we could do it, right? Like Ann Arbor is a great example, but they're also an extreme. They have multiple full-time, you know, sustainability employees for their, you know, for their pretty large city. And so, you know, we went through this whole exercise. I think there's a lot of good tools from that that we could probably utilize. So I think, Susan, independently, I'll send you what I have. And, you know, some of it's trash. Some of it, I think, might be really helpful. But we did do a lot of work on this. And as you said, it's like, it's really hard. And I think a hybrid approach that you're kind of alluding to is really smart, right? Like understanding what resources we have and what we can get away with.
Yeah, and I mean, fortunate for us, there are well-articulated climate action plans out there. So we don't have to start from zero. You know, we don't have to say, you know, what would be a plan. We could take on, like, maybe each of us could commit to reading one plan from another, you know, from, I'm from New England, and the towns around where I grew up are, you know, as they are on the other coast in California and different parts of the country, they're very much ahead of us in this area. So we don't have to, you know, start from zero. And, you know, maybe that would be a good way to start. If you, like, for me, that makes sense, because when I read about this town, I know exactly what it looks like. So I can say, okay, well, it's like River Forest in this way. It's not like River Forest in that way. And just, you know, sort of look what's out there and then take them and adapt them and incorporate what we do. So it's, you know, it's something that would take time. I mean, at the very least, this would be, you know, probably like a year long project. And, but I'm thinking that if we could chop it up into little bite-sized bits that, we could each work on in different ways.
So the other thing I'd throw in that, and by the way, we actually used Park Cities and Ann Arbor's as like, those were like the models actually for this clinic that we did, whatever you want to call it. The other thing though to consider is like coming up with a plan is one thing, right? But then actually executing on it requires a huge amount of time and resources as well that we just need to, you know, engineer that in as well.
Yeah.
Thanks, it gets into it.
That's true.
It's definitely the right thing to do. And I, like as Susan, as you and I talked about it, it kind of scares me in terms of the amount of time and effort it would take. But to your point, I mean, we do have the first step in that we know we have a baseline.
Yep.
We have a series of initiatives that, you know, again, as we come into the new year, we have to think about those initiatives. You know, and maybe some of them we, you know, kind of decide we're not going to continue with, if in fact there are other initiatives that we want to do that should take priority. You know, I'm just putting it out there. But one.
No, I was gonna throw on that, Lisa, that one of the conclusions that we came up with last time we went around on this was like, should we try to find grant money or get money from the village to actually hire somebody to help us, you know, basically put together a plan. That was something that came out of it too. And just another thing to kind of, you know, keep in the quiver for as we, you know, set off on this again.
Yeah. I mean, I think another way to look at this is that, you know, we're a relatively new commission. Been around, I guess it's going on 4 years, and we have limitations in terms of what we can do. But on the other hand, the village has signed these commitments. So if we determine that a volunteer commission, you know, working part-time with lives and families and everything else, can't achieve this, then we have to look for other solutions, which might be, you know, maybe it doesn't justify a full-time employee, but maybe there needs to be a part-time, you know, 20-hour a week employee who works on this, or we're not going to hit our mark. So if we're not going to hit our mark, then we should know that. We shouldn't just wait until we get there and throw up our hands and say, oh, well, you know, we couldn't do it because we didn't have the, you know, we didn't have the manpower, or we didn't have the, you know, whatever. But if you're going to be forward looking, then it's like, you know, and so the next part, and I don't know how hard this is, Shanna would know much more, would be to sort of project out, you know, like how much more can we, you know, we have our current emissions, but how much more can we improve, you know, with the programs that we have? And of course, you know, there are independent, you know, independently people are doing things too. I mean, they're changing, you know, hopefully when they're purchasing cars, they're thinking more about this and, you know, maybe home heating and other things too, they're making choices, but, you know, just how do we move this along? And so I think just the fact that it's, you know, big and gnarly is not a reason to shy away, just to sort of look at and assess it and say, you know, what can we do and what can't we do? And the part that we can't do it, then how do we address that? Do we hire a consultant? Do we think about, a part-time employee or, you know, what is it? And, you know, fortunately we have a little bit of working money now through the aggregation. So, we don't really need a grant because we have $30,000 or, you know, thereabouts that we could spend, because I find also going down that grant route is another way of just kicking the can, because, you know, then we're like, well, we have to find a grant opportunity. We have to fill this out. And that all takes time too. So if we decide that this is a good use of time and money, then, we do have that resource available to us now.
I totally agree with that approach, Susan. Like, of, you know, if the trustees want us to get to 8 and on our own, we can only get to 6, then they're going to have to bridge that gap.
Right. We have to figure that out or.
Yeah. Although we can certainly, you know, why don't we think about it? We can get back together. I mean, right now that $30,000, just to be clear, we're using half of that next year, unless we can come up with a grant, at least now. And Susan, you know, it's up to you if you want to, for the native gardens, because we have no funding for that next year. Secondly, the village has already said that they're not going to be hiring somebody, at least in the short term. They're a very lean team right now. And with COVID and some of the financial relief that the village is really trying hard to give to residents. I mean, just an anecdote, our unemployment rate in our village, based on the Cook County Assessor's Office, has gone from about 4 to 5% to 14 to 15%. So we have a lot of, kind of folks in our village that are very appreciative that the village is kind of holding the tax rate low and that kind of thing. So it's certainly something we can explore. It might be something just to manage everybody's expectation that we're gonna have to plan for. And maybe it's something we set ourselves up for this year such that next year we can hit the ground running. So we can do some work on it. But it would be great, Eric, to get, like, if you're gonna send the information from, and I do remember you doing that with Planet Green, with Gary, and all the gang there, is if you're sending it to Susan, send it to me so we can get it on the Google Drive, or just put it out on the Google Drive and send people links, because the more that all the information is consolidated on Google Drive, the better for everybody. I will put the Ann Arbor plan out there. And Susan, if you could put the presentation out there, but let's make sure we put it in the right folder so we can kind of find it, because there's definitely folders that have been sent out.
Lisa, you have both of them. Could you put both on? I sent you the full plan first, and then the second email was the presentation. So
okay, I will do that. But I think we just have to manage expectations again for all the reasons we just talked about. So it's, you know, so if it's a plan, if we can just say what can we do when, we can go from there. And there's Shannon. She had to leave. So anyway, it is 9:36.
8:36.
Oh, sorry, it's 8:36. Sorry, I'm in Florida, so yes, I'm on the East Coast, so it's 9 for me. Any other thoughts, ideas? I think that ends our remarks. I mean, I think we have a lot of to-dos. What I will try to do is actually summarize the to-dos. I know that John, you're doing the meeting minutes, but we won't see those till next week. So I'll try to say, look, here's some of the things we talked about kind of doing. So I'll just do a quick summary.
I'll just say thank you, Susan, for, you know, getting us to think about the gnarly issues. And I'd be willing to take if you have a list of climate action plans that you think are worth looking at, I'd be willing to read one of them, because okay. I think that, you know, it helps. Okay. Get an idea of what it is that we're talking about. So
okay, I'll give you a call and we can talk.
Okay.
And if any of the students want to take one on too, that'd be a great thing. Catherine?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be willing to help out wherever anyone needs anything. I know Lauren and I were talking about kind of tackling more waste management things and composting, but I'm happy to help with anything else that people are looking into.
Because you're the only one of all of us that's really trained.
Yeah, you're the only one qualified.
We're going to be coming to you.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm already looking at graduate school, because I still don't feel trained enough, so.
Good.
Susan, I'll make sure to send you Catherine's contact information.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so our next meeting is February 9th. Be there, be square.
Okay.
Anything else?
Good to see you all.
Yeah. Care. Stay safe, everybody.
And yeah. I just want to say to the students, if you guys have any questions and you didn't feel comfortable bringing up, just shoot an email and say, you know, I didn't understand this. I didn't know what this was. Or if you have a comment too, you know, we'd love to hear from you. Don't feel like you're just bystanders. You're part of our commission.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Peace out.
Do you need a motion? I move we adjourn.
Second.
Second, good.
All right. Okay. See y'all next month.
Good night.